What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Stacey Kaiser is a licensed psychotherapist, relationship expert, author, and speaker. Stacey was drawn to psychology in her youth and finds deep value in helping others navigate some of the hardest portions of their lives. In this thoughtful conversation, Stacey shares about the field of psychology, offers tips on finding the right therapist, and divulges how she's utilized her expertise both in front of the camera and behind the scenes of some of true crime's most well-known docuseries. The Broken Cycle Media team extends our intense gratitude to Stacey for her work, time, energy, and advocacy in this episode and within all of her other efforts.
My name is Stacey Kaiser, and I have been a licensed marriage and family therapist for over 25 years. I also have a pretty good-sized private practice, and I do organizational consulting as well, working behind the scenes for entertainment companies, helping them support people they're working with on TV shows. I also have been an expert on a bunch of morning shows and talk shows. I've had some series on Lifetime and most recently 7 seasons of Fatal Vows on Investigation Discovery. I have always referred to my getting into the mental health space as a calling. I was a 10-year-old kid giving advice to my friends. It probably wasn't very good advice. I was only 10. When I was in middle school, I started reading self-help books and psychology books. It literally became a passion of mine to try to understand psychologically what's going on with people and to try to provide as much help, support, and healing as I can. I started my career for the first 20 years working in a family crisis center. That sort of informed everything I ultimately ended up doing. I have dealt with every kind of crisis, dealt with lots of victims, survivors, and even some perpetrators along the way. I think it was 2 things that drew me there. The first was when I was in college, we had to go get training in the field doing different things. And I started working in a women's jail with the perpetrators in the jail. And what I found is that many of them were victims. A lot of the crimes they had committed, everything from doing drugs to try to numb the pain because they weren't getting the right kind of healing, to having been incredibly victimized as younger people and then not healing and then victimizing other people. And so that was the first part. Then the second part is, as I mentioned earlier, I started out in a family crisis center. There were lots of people who had been hurt. We ended up getting a grant to do work with victims of all kinds of domestic violence. I ran those groups along with a colleague of mine. Some of the women were going back to the environments that they were harmed in. We did have a couple of men, by the way. And so it became sort of my mission to try to help them get out of that and help them get in a better mindset so that they didn't feel like they had to be continuing a relationship with somebody who was hurting them. I think that everyone should have a therapist, and you don't have to go all the time. I just contact my therapist for like a one-off. She knows me really well. I'll just sometimes go one time and then 2 times later when I have something else going on. And so it's great to have that relationship built in. If you're looking at the mental health field or you're seeking help for your emotional well-being, there are lots of different kinds of people that you can talk to. The first category are psychiatrists, which are people who have gone to medical school, but specialize in the area of prescription medicine and the brain and things like that. That's where you would go if you thought that you wanted to get medication. Now, that said, there are lots of psychiatrists who actually do talk therapy. And then there are psychologists, and those are people who also went and got a doctorate. They learned clinical skills and research skills, typically, and some of them go out and become researchers and working with clients or patients. Then we have what is called the PsyD, which is the non-research version of a doctorate. I was considering doing that, but at the time that I was going to school, it wasn't widely known. And then there is what I do, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist. All of the people that I've listed already have a license. Licensed marriage and family therapists don't only do marriage and family therapy. We see individuals, we run groups and all of that. I was drawn to it because I'm not a huge fan of research, even though I will refer to it at times because I think statistics can be helpful. I just wasn't interested in doing it. I also really liked the clinical piece, like the training that I would have working one-on-one with people and in groups. And then there's social workers who do more community-based things and individual counseling. And then the last one I would want to highlight is a life coach. What I want people to know is while there can be very good life coaches, you don't really need to be trained to be a life coach. And I caution people who have been through any kind of trauma or who are dealing with deep emotional issues about seeing a life coach because they don't always have the right training to manage heavy stuff. So if you're just trying to work with someone who's going to help you achieve goals, that could be a great option for you. But if it's something really challenging and traumatic, I would consider reaching out to a person who's been trained and licensed in the field of mental health. I always say that shopping for a therapist can be like shopping for a pair of shoes. There's tons of different styles. That said, you really have to try your therapist on like you would try on a pair of shoes. You wouldn't just buy one without putting your foot in it. A lot of people just think that, oh, I found this therapist and they're going to be mine. It's very much like anything else in the world. You're not stuck with us. You should like us. We should be a fit for you. I tell people, if you asked 10 therapists how they would handle the same situation, you could possibly get 10 different points of view. There are some therapists that really focus on just the individual. There are others that look at an entire family, even if the family isn't there. There are some people that don't care about your past history. Other people care a lot about your past history. But I think that what most of us nowadays want to find is the kind of therapist that will meet us where we are and walk us through the journey that we are on. And that they're not trying to drag us to a place that we don't want to go, but that they really are a partner in working with whatever issue that we bring to them. It is a relationship, and the hope is it's ongoing. You have to feel comfortable and safe with that person. You should not feel intimidated. You shouldn't feel like they're overbearing, like you have to please them. Me, as a people pleaser in recovery, has to really pay attention to that when I'm shopping for a therapist. It really has to feel good. Whatever your issue is that you're walking in the door with or that you've dealt with in the past that you think is relevant, you want to ask that therapist, do you have experience in this area? You want to ask the therapist, with whatever issue that you bring into the therapist's office or the Zoom room, because a lot of therapists are doing that now, whatever that issue is, you want to make sure that the therapist has experience in that area. If they do not have experience in that area, they're probably not a right fit for you. The other thing that you want to find out a little bit about is what is their style? Are they really quiet? I know therapists that hardly talk. They do a lot of Are they really chatty? There's some therapists that talk so much that people love it and other people don't love it. Or do they have a more of a coaching style? Are they more of somebody who's going to be passive and sit by? get a sense and a vibe of literally who are they and what is their style. And then the last thing that I think is important is it affordable for you? There are therapists that are low fee that work on a sliding scale. There are even organizations where you can get therapy for free or for just a few dollars. And then there are therapists that take insurance that are out of network and in network. And so if it's something that you're going to start to pursue, you want to make sure that you can afford to continue to do some of the work that you need to do. There really are different kinds of therapies. I'm what is called an integrative therapist. I use all different kinds of modalities. So I do some cognitive behavioral work. When I'm dealing with trauma, I do a lot of trauma work. I do breathing exercises, inner child work. I work on resilience and coping skills. I do something called narrative therapy to start working on the narrative. Anytime anyone has been a victim of a crime or has experienced trauma in any way, it always affects us. It makes a narrative in us of what's wrong with me? How did I contribute to this? So I do a lot of work on trying to erase that narrative and let people know that there are just bad people out there and it isn't because of you. My husband always jokes, he calls me relentless because I am a relentless person when I want something. And I relentlessly want to help people. And so I just feel like I have more tools in my toolbox. That gives me an opportunity to say, let's see if this works for you. If that doesn't work for you, let's try this, let's try that. I do think EMDR is a great resource. It is not something that I have advanced training in. So I always refer my clients to an EMDR specialist and they'll see that person a few times while seeing me. EMDR is great for some people. Some people don't really like it, but I always want people to try it if they've been through a traumatic experience. But I ultimately feel like the therapist that you are working with has to feel like a fit. It has to feel like it's working and it's right for you and you're getting the kind of support and guidance that you need. What I always want to say to people is when you have been through a traumatic experience, finding support is really critical. If you have a great support system in your personal life, then you don't always need to reach out to other places. But if you feel like you don't, or that the people in your life aren't enough, then you want to go for professionals. And a lot of organizations have access to people who understand whatever it is that you've been through. One of my favorite organizations that I've been very involved in is RAINN, R-A-I-N-N. They specialize in sexual assault. I highly recommend them. And they also have great resources for other types of victims. So people can always reach out to them and they have great referrals. There is also Crisis Text Line that's very good. Crisis Text Line gives you the opportunity to anonymously text with someone to get support and resources. It's sort of interesting how I ended up getting into the media. I was not looking to do that, but I had a friend who was working for a production company. And he said to me, you know, I think you're a really great speaker. You have all this experience in these heavy topics. Would you be interested in applying for this television show? I was petrified. And he said, just be yourself. And I did. And I got the show. I am just riveted by what goes on in the minds of people who commit crimes. It's something I've always been interested in, even before I was working on shows. I used to watch Dateline to Catch a Predator and 2020, any kind of documentary or docuseries. I can't say that I enjoy them, but I'm so fascinated by them. A lot of people tell me that's why they watch them as well. I would say that my journey in the media has been in three large umbrellas. I'm considered a relationship expert, a parenting expert, and then also considered an expert in survivors and also the psychology of what is going on in the criminal mind. I have worked behind the scenes on surviving R. Kelly and surviving Jeffrey Epstein, several other shows, working with the survivors who were being interviewed. People who have been victims of trauma, there's a lot of research that says that talking about what happened to you is very healing. but it's also very difficult. And so I support those people. What I do is everything under the sun for a production. It would start with helping to assess people who were about to come on and be filmed and make sure that they're stable, talk to their therapists, things like that, to make sure that this really is the right environment for them. And then I also work on training the crew. There was a show that I was working on. I hadn't trained the crew. They didn't think they needed it. One of the survivors that was sharing their story was deep into a heavy, emotional, tear-filled story. And all of a sudden, they heard tin foil opening and was watching some guy in the back open a sandwich. They were furious. They were hurt. They felt uncared for. Now, the guy didn't, in his defense, realize he was in eye line and didn't realize he made noise with his foil, and he felt terrible about it. But it's reminded me how important it is to train the crew and the people who are actually working with and sitting with people who are sharing their stories. So I do a lot of that. If they need me during the interviewing process, I'm there for them as well. And then as the show airs, there's tons of other things that happen. There's social media. There's having your family watch you sharing your story. So I'm kind of on call and available for people to reach out to me to get support and guidance to manage all of those kinds of things that come up once a show is aired. I also provide referrals for people. So as a person licensed in the state of California, I'm not allowed to do therapy with people outside of the state of California. I'm also not allowed to have what is called a dual relationship with a person, working with them on a show and being their therapist, even if they do live in California. So I will reach out to my people in states and counties and try and find them somebody who can see them if they need it. I also have been on a lot of talk shows and done a bunch of news shows. I just completed 7 seasons of a show called Fatal Vows on Investigation Discovery, where one spouse killed another spouse. Fatal Vows is rerunning like crazy everywhere. The most recent one is Seduced to Slay. Both of those shows were very similar. And what happens is that the production company goes and interviews all of the important people, and then they give me stacks and stacks of information to read. So I read all of that. A lot of times I will go online and look for news stories connected to it. Sometimes the production company will give it to me. I'm just trying to absorb as much information about the story or the case that I possibly can. Then I start to think about, what is my psychological point of view on this? What do I think some of the after effects are of the people who have been impacted by whatever it is that's occurred? And I take notes on all of that. And so then when it becomes filming day, I am literally sitting there with my notes and the piles of paper to reference if I need. But I do actually try to remember what I think and memorize it so that I can speak to it. Also, when you're working on a show like this, it's kind of like anything else. Even though we've prepared, sometimes the interviewer, the producer, starts asking questions of me that I haven't previously thought about because they just think of something on the fly. And then I will just try and take my expertise and the knowledge that I've absorbed and answer the question. Working on Fatal Vows, Dr. Brian Russell and I became very good friends. We collaborated a lot. We didn't choose each other. We were put together because we have very differing views of the world in very many ways. He's also a lawyer and a forensic psychologist. I was more of the relationship expert component. So we brought different things to the table. And I think part of what was interesting, a lot of people say it seemed like I was irritated with him or he was irritated with me. We absolutely disagreed or some of our views on some of these cases that we worked on. And I kind of like that because I think it represents the entire world. I mean, there's so many things going on right now where there are polarizing points of view. So I find that interesting when you can have a dialogue with a person. And I do like doing that. One advantage to being by myself is I don't have anyone disagreeing with me, but that's okay too. Working on Fatal Vows was always really difficult for the reason that there's always a victim that didn't make it. Somebody who was a good person was killed. And so that was really, really hard. Oftentimes we would interview family members who were survivors, and they had one parent who had been killed, murdered, and the other parent who was in jail. And so they were alone. The parent that was in jail or prison, they didn't want anything to do with them. And so they felt like an orphan. Hearing those kinds of stories has been very, very difficult for me. Some of the stories that have impacted me the most have been the people who really have been put into a situation that have tested their limits and made them drop to their knees, where they felt like they had nothing left to move forward. I always say, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, somehow they pull themselves together, lean on their support system, and find strength after being made so small. Those are the people that really inspire me the most. I worked with a woman a couple of years ago who had been abused financially, sexually, emotionally, and physically. She was a shell of a person. Her voice was small. She was afraid she wouldn't be able to ever work again because she was just wiped out and exhausted. She just had nothing left. And when she came to see me, she said, "I'm more than this, and I can't let the person that made me feel this way win." And step by step, inch by inch, she has rebuilt her life. And I look at her, and to me, I wish I could shout her name out and put her story everywhere, because she would be a role model for perseverance. I am deeply affected by all of the work I do because I'm an empath. If someone doesn't know what an empath is, it's a person who feels people. Like, I walk into a room and I can feel the energy. I talk to a person, and if they're in pain, I can emotionally feel their pain. And so it's challenging, even though I absolutely love all of the work that I do. I really do prioritize self-care on a lot of levels. That means I spend time in nature. There's a lot of research that being in nature, looking at water, even if it's walking by a lake or being in a bathtub, that is really good for mental health. I make sure that I spend time with friends. I don't only live my life dealing in the world of heavy things. I watch a lot of mindless TV as an escape as well. I also make sure that I rest, I eat well, and that I get exercise, because all of those things are cornerstones for mental health. I think the last thing that I do is, if I'm having a hard time or carrying something heavy, I talk to someone. As a therapist, we have confidentiality, so I can't give details about somebody I'm seeing, but I certainly can reach out to another therapist and say, "I had this really hard client," and then I don't give any distinguishing details, but I will share a little bit to talk it through and problem solve how I'm feeling and how I can best help them.
Another portion of your multimedia journey is your book, How to Be a Grown-Up, and what's your goal with the guide?
So my book, How to Be a Grown-Up, interestingly enough, the publisher, HarperCollins, reached out to me and said, "You do all of this work where you're giving advice in the media about how to live a better life. And so is there a way that you'd be willing to put into a book some concise ways to help a person live a better life?" And so they came up with the title. It literally is the 10 categories that we all need to live our best lives. It talks about things like relationships and support, freedom from addictions. It talks about flexibility and resilience, time management, healing, all kinds of things like that. I had another book come out. I have a client who basically signed away his confidentiality to write a book with me. His name is Anthony Evans, and he is a Christian gospel singer and faith leader, and came to therapy with me. So he was on this mission to convince people who are highly religious that therapy is okay. And so we also wrote a book recently called When Faith Meets Therapy. In that book, we talk a lot about toxic people. So even if you're not religious, it's a good book to read. We have a couple chapters on dealing with toxic people and talking about forgiveness, coping skills, and all of that. So that's how that book came about. I am so riveted by engaging television, podcasts, anything in the media. I just like the energy of what it provides. I think it's a great platform for people to be entertained, but also to learn and make a difference in their lives. Part of what I've really enjoyed about it and has kept me going is I really feel like I'm helping a larger audience. There's nothing more that I like than having someone reach out to me on social media or having them email me through my website and saying, what you said made a difference. Because there's a lot of people that can't afford to reach out for help. And so the fact that I am making a difference in their lives is a big deal to me. There is always an educational component if you're open to listening and watching and absorbing it. Some of the kinds of things that I've seen happen is people will realize that they are in a toxic relationship when they didn't realize they were in a toxic relationship. A lot of us have friends and family that if we share that someone in our lives is doing something wrong, they'll say, what are you doing being friends with them? Or you should cut off from them, or you should dump them. Not everybody's able to sort of listen to that. So oftentimes people are watching these things happen and they will identify that the person in my life is exactly like this. I need to do something about it. I would also add, what true crime does is it provides awareness to people of things that actually do happen in the world. A lot of people don't like to watch the news. It can be very upsetting. And it makes them be more cautious and just aware in their lives of things that can go wrong. It is true that a lot of people watching these stories are just really watching it for entertainment value. I've heard that a lot. And I wish that they would understand that the stories are actually true and that there are victims. And the victim isn't always the person that is immediately looking like the victim, but there is a ripple effect. When a person has been victimized, it can impact their whole circle, their friends, their family, their relationships, their ability to interface with their own children. And so I wish people understood that instead of just, oh, wow, this is a cool crime show. I wish people knew how hard it was to recover from any kind of a victimization. And I also wish people would not compare traumas. I work with a lot of people who've been through all different kinds of traumas. And people will say to me, well, this happened to me, but something worse happened to my friend. It's really important to let everyone have their own experience. So that's a lesson that I would want to pass along. What you have been through does not define you. You are not only what you have experienced. You are so much more. Remembering that and working on finding your strength, healing the pain, and working on resilience, which to me is the ability to bounce back, cope, and adapt. Focusing on all of those things will help you feel strong again. As long as you are still living and breathing, it is not over. Keep fighting.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. I just really appreciate you lending your expert voice to so many different facets of the media for education and awareness.
Thank you. I'm happy to do it. And I appreciate you. I know that you've had your own really traumatic experiences, and I think it's really wonderful that you use your platform to help other people.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
My father made Chico my legal guardian, which I still can't believe he did that. I'm the one that told Chico all the stuff my dad used to do to me. So all Chico had to do was become what my father wasn't. He knew that there's no way I was going to go to my father. I was handed over to him on a silver platter. It has been haunting me ever since.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.